Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's the Drink Talking with the Thinking Drinkers, Ben McFarland and Tom Sandon, and Mistress of Wine, Sam Capehorn. All the booze news and views, from absinthe to Zinfandel. Just Imbibers.
Welcome, everybody, to It's the Drink Talking, a podcast where we will solve your drinking problems. And not the big problem where you have an over-reliance on the quantity of alcohol, but the quality of alcohol, because we are here to improve your liquid lives. And I am joined, as ever, by, to my left, Mr. Tom Sandon.
Hello. Hello, Ben.
Hello,
hi.
Tom.
Hi. I haven't seen you for since 5 minutes. Yesterday.
Yep. And who are you? What's going on?
Who am I? I'm a man with a plan.
You're a spirits guy?
I'm the spirits guy. I'm your spiritual guru.
Nice.
In this quest. And I'm a drinker of spirits, and I've been drinking around London town over the last few days, as well as looking after my two children.
And I'm getting hock under the collar. My temperature is rising, and I may even have a semi-or, because, yes, because we are also joined by Sam Capehorn, the wine mistress.
Or the mistress of wine.
Oh, mistress of whatever.
Same thing. So, yeah, I'm Sam. I'm the wine part of the podcast. My husband will testify to the fact I'm very good at wining, and particularly at the moment. So I'm here to help you with your vinous education.
Mm. Excellent. And you've got a plane to catch later, so we can't dilly-dally.
Hola, hola.
Well, you are to France.
No.
And you're going with a group of people. We've seen some pictures of the people you're with. Do you want to talk about any of those? I'd like to.
Nope.
Okay. Let's move on. So we always kick off this podcast with a feature we have christened Spit or Swallow.
That's good.
It's not as good as it sounds. And the spitting means something that we don't like in the drinks world, and the swallow is something we do like in the drinks world. And lo and behold, it is me who is doing this feature this week.
Yay.
And my swallow is a good one.
John Roll.
Okay.
Well, it's a beer made from Wee Wee.
Oh,
no, get out of here.
No, it's
Someone's just done a wee in a glass.
Well, no, it's more complicated than that. Okay. In Denmark.
Human wee?
Yes, human wee.
Yeah. You hesitated there as though the crux of the story was not clear to
Can
you.
Can I be clear? Is this a spit or a swallow?
This is a swallow. I like
it. Okay.
I like it. But
Ben likes drinking wee. Yeah. There is a name for that.
Well, apparently it is good for you, drinking wee. There is the thing called urotherapy. People claim there are health benefits from drinking your own wee. A boxer called Juan Marquez, who is a pretty good boxer, and what he would do, he would get all adrenalised, and then after a fight, he would have a wee, and then he would drink it.
Isn't it better known as a sexual perversion?
Yes, I would have thought so. Didn't Madonna used to do it as well?
She used to wee on her feet to stop her getting athlete's foot.
Okay. Well, there's wee.
And of course, you can wee on yourself or got someone else to pee on you when you've had a jellyfish sting, which I was stung twice in Costa Rica. Terrifying, because you never know if it's actually going to be a poisonous one or not. And I think I just use an ice cube.
But did you ask anyone to wee on you?
Well, my husband didn't offer, and I really didn't fancy anyone else peeing on my arm or my lip.
Oh, it's on your lip, okay. That
Which brings us back to wee beer.
Yes. So this is happening in Denmark, in Copenhagen.
Hot guys.
And girls.
And home of Hugo. Do you know what Hugo is?
We do. We have it at my son's school. It's kind of been embraced as a thing to
chill out.
Chill out the children.
It involves snuggling up, putting a candle
and
on,
eating cake.
and eating cake and
eating
drinking tea.
Cinnamon buns, is that part of it?
I think it was that Swedish cinnamon buns.
Don't know, I love buns.
They've got a great lifestyle.
So they do that and make wee beer.
So what is happening is, in 2015, at a music festival, the Roskilde Festival, which is near Copenhagen, they got 54,000 litres of urine. They collected it from the festival goers. And then they took this urine and they sprinkled it all over fields of malted barley and used it as fertiliser.
Mm. So it's very green.
It's very green. Yeah, it's called beer cycling, apparently. It doesn't really work, does it?
Sorry. Beer cycling.
Beer cycling. It's probably full of nutrients.
And minerals. And God knows what if it's been at a festival.
Well, this is what I was thinking. Like, there are some drugs. Don't do drugs. Drugs are bad.
Stay
in your pee for ages. But it was a year later.
Okay, I reckon that's fine.
How long does it stay in? Surely if you took a urine test and you had traces of cocaine, MDMA, other drugs are available, and you put it in a sort of test tube, it would stay in it.
We've been down this road before, because I remember deja vu, talking about LSD. I'm sure that stays in your bloodstream for a long time.
Deja vu all over again.
So basically, you don't get trippy beer.
Well, no. Oh, well, tell us about this beer then, Ben.
So anyway, so
is it trippy beer?
Well, it's a brewery called the Nuremberg Brewhouse. I've actually been there. It's a cracking Copenhagen brew pub. And it was started by this guy who was at Carlsberg, who really knew his stuff. So he took sort of Carlsberg sort of scientific technological know-how, and then he sort of paired it up with this kind of crafty approach to beer. And they do loads of great beers. And they've taken 11 tonnes of malting barley, and they're making 60,000 bottles of this beer, which they rather cleverly have called Pilsner beer.
They have not. Is it a pun on Pilsner? Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's a better one than beer cycling, isn't it?
It is.
So it's kind of like a lager-y type of beer.
Yeah, yeah. I have not had the pleasure of drinking it.
It hasn't been discharged.
It hasn't been discharged.
It kind of begs the question, why did they think irrigate with pee rather than commonly used water?
Well, or that indeed, water could be used to save lives.
But what about poo-poo?
Yeah, number twos. Yeah. Could they take it a step further?
Well,
I've done a number two in a field as well. Yeah. So perhaps we are in some way helping.
But it's like in biodynamic viticulture, they use cow poo and they bury it in horns and they put it.
Yeah.
And obviously, I live in the country. And we had Tractor Tuesday this week, where I just got stuck behind so many tractors, you know, just moving manure from different sites on the fields.
It's not called Tractor Tuesday.
No, my son and I coined it that just because we were so late to school because we got stuck behind so many sodding tractors.
What did they have? Did they have like New Hollands and John Deere's? And...
Well, I tell you, I don't know, but I'll tell you what did happen.
You don't know.
I nearly got a pile of shit on the front of my car because this guy in front had to brake really fast. And then, so I had to brake really fast. And his whole back bit was full of manure and it just missed the run of my car, and then this load went splat, steaming turd on the road in front of me, and I thought that was really lucky.
The farmer's back bit let out a load
country
of shit.
Perils.
This is the country for you, folks.
But my point being that you get, you know, manure, poo of various sorts is used in agricultural and viticultural areas around the world. Never heard about urine being used.
Well, I mean, I'm assuming it is a bit of a novelty.
Gimmick.
Yeah,
it's
or is it ecological?
It's sustainable.
To be clear.
To be clear, you have to drink lots of water.
To be clear, Ben, this is your swallow, but you haven't tried it.
No, but I just like the idea of it.
Okay.
And also, actually, You can't taste the urine in the beer. There's no way. The rainwater that falls on the barley fields is not going to be evident within the beer.
Really, Ben?
Yes.
Well, then why do they talk about the water they use in brewing?
Because that's not the water that influences the flavour. The water influences the flavour.
Everything has its role, though, Ben, doesn't it?
Well, no, what they should have done, which is better, because the way they germinate the barley is they soak it in water, in warm water, and trick it into thinking it's spring. What they should have done is use the wee then. Because that is warm.
I won't be first in line to try the wee beer, I've got to say.
It's a nice story, though. Well done there.
Yeah, very original. Great story, love it.
And some of the beers I've tasted in my life do actually taste like piss. So why not? Why not put a piss beer out there and compete with some of those mainstream lagers that
absolutely.
They don't taste that nice anyway. So
taking one on our own game.
Yeah.
So that's my swallow. I like that.
Okay. Fiji. What's next? You're in charge.
Yeah. My spit starts out sounding like a swallow because I've noticed that all the supermarkets have upped their game when it comes to craft beer. I was in a Marks and Sparks yesterday. Get me?
Wow. Posh.
Yeah, and they've got an amazing range of craft beer, and they sort of have their own label stuff, which is clear where they brew their beers. They do some really good stuff with Adnams, and they've got a really, really good range. And then you go into Waitrose, have done the same. They've added 27 new craft beers to its range. Asda has added 100 new craft beers.
Wow.
And Tesco, I've not been to Tesco because I wouldn't, has upped its game massively as well.
Aldi just won an award at one of the industry things for the best drinks selection.
Yep.
So they've
They're jolly good.
They're very good as well. This is not just me listing supermarkets.
No, it doesn't, but it sounds like it does sound like a swallow. It sounds like at the moment this is in your mouth.
Yeah.
Are you going to spit it or
are
you going to swallow?
The reason I'm going to spit it is because when I was in Marks and Spencer's yesterday, I was admiring the wall of great beer. And then this lady was stood next to, well, this is it. She was on the phone.
They are allowed to.
Yeah. Mm. She was on the phone to what I presume is her husband. She didn't know where to start. She was saying, oh, this one's called this, this one's called that. And you could hear him going, oh, I don't know. And the point is that they just put the beers out there.
The wall of wine. It's a wall of beer.
There's no description.
Pointers,
there's
leads,
no pointers, ladder of flavour or anything about stars. There's no informative pamphlets that people can look at. With all the smartphone technology these days, why can't you have little links where you can zap on it and you could even get a video, say, featuring two or maybe three extremely dynamic drinks writers and experts who can tell people about
what... Sort of their stuff.
That's a good idea. Because it's the same with spirits. I went into M&S and they had a huge selection of gins, but they were just bottles. I mean, it doesn't give that much information on the label, so you don't really know why you're making
that
choice.
And they're not that cheap. I mean, neither should they be, because they're very well-made products. But if someone who's not really into beer and is, but is trying to get more adventurous and picks up a double IPA and doesn't know what it is, gets it home and blows their taste buds away, they're not going to come back to it.
I think it's a real perennial problem. I think it's been certainly like that in wine forever, because you just get a row of bottles. They're arranged according to, you know, white, pink, red, and then they're arranged normally according to country. And then within that, it's just like you're kind of left to your own devices. And then occasionally people being really radical, but, you know, rearranged by style, and they get a bit of press. And it's like, oh, we're trying to help the consumers. We're going to do light and fresh, and then we're going to do this, we're going to do that. No, there needs to be more shelf barcodes. And exactly with apps and stuff nowadays, there's no real excuse for no one being a little bit dynamic and trying to educate people in-store at the point of purchase, because that's the most important place.
When it comes to wine, I am mostly interested in price. So I don't feel... Yeah, I don't feel there are often enough devices to tell me
driver?
That it's under £5. And really, I need that information.
Thinking drinkers, drink less, drink better.
But I do agree. In terms of the supermarket side, I wonder if it's just a bit of a hangover from this time where I would go to the supermarket to buy in bulk and buy cheap. And really, this revolution in drinking habits means that now there's more stuff arriving on shelves and they just haven't got around to doing it yet.
Well,
and they need someone to go in there and say,
all the press releases we've been getting from these supermarkets, they've all had the guys that buy these beers
pontificating about their
beers. We're very proud, we've expanded our range. And it's very easy just buying more beer and putting it on the shelves.
But you've got to educate people about it and help them to understand.
Absolutely.
If my husband sent me to the supermarket and said, can you pick me 5 interesting beers? Why would I made a start? I'd pick out the brands I'd heard of.
Yeah.
And that's a bit uncool, really.
And there's beer and food recommendations. Mm. They could just have them there.
Yeah.
And plonk the nice beers next to the food that it goes with.
I mean, with spirits, you could pair it up with ingredients for cocktails and you could be really creative about the drinks.
There's definitely an opportunity there
and
for us.
I just think, well, that's not the sole reason I brought it up, but it is a big reason.
Mm. We are available for hire. Visit our website for more information.
Extortionate consultancy. Great. So there we are.
Good.
That's my spit and swallow. I swallowed some wee-wee and I spat out some lazy supermarkets. And after a quick word from our commercial partners, we will be doing a lovely tasting with Tom Sandham.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sam Capehorn, the Mistress of Wine, and you're listening to It's the Drink Talking.
Yeah. Hello. Welcome back, listeners. What we'll be tasting, you'll be learning about, and you can go out and buy afterwards. And today, it's American whiskey, folks.
Yeehaw.
Is this
Yeehaw.
A stuff that's vanillary that I quite like?
Yes.
Yum. As a non-whiskey person.
Yes.
So is bourbon a subcategory of American whiskey?
Well, Sam. Oh,
and if so, what are the others and what makes it that?
If you stop butting in.
Sorry.
This is
all. I'll be able to tell you.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I was going to ask you what Vinexpo is because I don't know what that is.
It's a wine fair in Bordeaux every year about June. I've never gone.
Okay. Guillaume Degli.
Some
French dude. Mm. And he said that American whiskey volumes are going to increase from 1.91 million 9-litre cases to 2.41 million by 2020.
Wow, he sounds like the kind of guy I want to go for a drink
and
with.
Certainly, stats do back up the current surge in this. And apparently, millennials are turning their back on Sauvignon Blanc spritzers for cool craft spirits, which American whiskey is.
I think anyone should turn their back on Sauvignon Blanc spritzers.
Really?
Just drink the Sauvignon.
A spritzer.
Really? I would never drink a spritzer. Don't see the point. I'd rather a lemonade.
Well, okay. Well, there you go. You've heard it here, folks. Stop drinking spritzers. That could be our new campaign. Don't drink that shit. So why is it so successful? Because it is sweeter, Sam. Mm, yes. Now, what you've alluded to there is American whiskey is a very wide category, but we're going to be specifically drinking bourbon. And bourbon is a very specific category within that, which is bound by certain rules and regulations. We can consider bourbon America's national spirit. It's regulated. And when they make it, they have to use 51% corn in the mash bill. And the mash bill is all the grains that goes into the water and provides us with the sugars and a lot of the flavour. Now, corn is very sweet. So by having 51% of corn in this mash bill at the start of the process, we've got lots of residual sugars, and that's what gives it the start of its sweetness.
And does it give it more texture?
It does. It gives it a bit of texture, but they also use barley, which is very good for the enzymes, and they use rye, and these are sort of the flavouring, and they can add a bit of texture as well. But what we're really talking about there is the sweetness versus some of the spicy notes. And then it's distilled and it's put into new American oak barrels. And these also provide us with sweetness.
And the spicy notes.
And
maybe.
Some spicy notes, but vanillins, which are imparting vanilla into the spirit. Now, these bourbon barrels are used in all spirits industries. They're used in the Scotch whiskey industry and in the rum industry as well. They're sold on after the Americans have used them. But because they're new, they have a lot of that flavour in them.
So I love that flavour.
That is what really makes American whiskey and bourbon in particular so popular. And a lot of people say they don't like whiskey. So for anyone who's listening who's never really approached the whiskey category, this is a good start.
That is me. Before doing this podcast and learning more from you chaps, I would categorically say I do not like whiskey.
Right.
But I've now learnt that I like bourbon.
Okay, well, that would be
Diplomatico rum, which is for the same reason.
That's also got
lots of vanilla in from the oak barrels, isn't it?
It does. They use ex bourbon barrels.
Yeah.
That's what will add some of that. Oh,
yeah.
That was
great.
Oh, that was good, wasn't it? So I'm going to pour some of this bourbon,
which looks suspiciously like something you might put over Ben's Danish beer.
Now that's the one you're going to actually taste second, folks. I'm going to pour them both at the same time. The first one we're going to have is some Buffalo Trace.
Is that for me?
It is for you, yeah. Is that not enough?
Well, it's been poured, literally half a thimbleful. Oh,
that's too much.
That's too much.
So, please don't wipe that on my leg, sir. Listeners, she's touching my leg. That's sexual harassment. So, it was quite nice, though. So, we've got two. And what I've done today is tried to pick two introductory bourbons for people. Now, as we do these podcasts over time, we might have some more challenging American whiskies to sample, and we'll obviously get onto single malt scotch, and we'll branch out to Japanese whiskies. But today, these are two very sort of great introductory bourbons. Buffalo Trace is made at one of the oldest continuously working stills in America. They were allowed to continue distillation during Prohibition. So, they set up in the 19th century. And
why?
Well, because they were arguing that they were making alcohol as medicine. So there you go. If you could prove you were making it for medicinal reasons, you're allowed to continue making alcohol. This is not medicine.
It's not medicine.
Yeah. But it's made there. It's actually the Buffalo Trace Bourbon was launched in 1999, but the distillery is epic. They've won lots of awards. They make the Van Winkle whiskies there, Buffalo Trace Antique Collection, Weller Bourbons, lots of lovely stuff. And it takes its name after the buffaloes, or the bison, who would cross over the Kentucky River where the distillery is based, and the buffaloes or the bison would cross over there. The only difference between a buffalo and a bison, Ben, is...
Here comes the joke.
You can't wash your hands in a buffalo.
Thank you, Ben.
Yes, thank you very much.
Can I just need to want to go back to something that you were saying before.
You can.
Why didn't everyone say that they were producing booze for medicinal reasons?
Because there's only so many reasons that it would have been served up as medicine.
The government would have gone, okay, you guys do the medicine.
Yeah, everyone was drinking, and the government wanted decent booze, and that while the people were making it in their bathtubs, that stuff was deadly. Oof. In fact, there's a story we've discovered recently where the American government deliberately sanctioned poisonous booze to put people off.
Oh,
which is a horrible, horrible story.
Yes.
Prohibition was a bad idea all round.
Don't do it.
Idiots. Mm. So, yes, we've got this bourbon. Now, it's been in a barrel for somewhere around between 7 and 8 years.
Nice colour. Does that bring part of some of the colour as
well? All of the colour, yes, Sam. When it comes off the stills, it's completely transparent. All whiskey,
no
all dark
way.
Spirits. It's all the interaction with the wood and sometimes a little bit of caramel to give a consistency, not for flavour, to the colour. But all the colour that you get from dark spirits comes from its interaction with wood.
Ooh.
And if you smell this,
it smells amazing.
It does smell nice, doesn't it?
Stuff.
I get a bit of
vanilla,
caramel on there, but
vanilla.
Lots of vanilla. I get a slight orange citrusy note to it as well. And some people get mint. Now, if you try these whiskies in a line next to lots of different varieties, you might start to pick up things like mint. But it will work very well in a mint julep.
Well, that actually was my next question. Not specifically about a mint julep. Mm. But, again, as a total sub-novice on bourbon and whiskey, how would one drink this? Would you have it over ice? What's the deal with putting water in?
Well, there seems
cocktails?
To be,
is it too good for a cocktail?
Less of a reluctance to use bourbon in mixed drinks and cocktails. It's much more versatile than, I would say, single malt whiskey, Scotch whiskey. And there doesn't seem to be quite the sort of historical hang-ups with it. It's seen as a bit more approachable by the sort of cocktail crowd.
Yeah, I think that as well, because it's been born in a region that had a very strong cocktail heritage, and obviously America has been very passionate about mixed drinks from the sort of 18th century, really. So it's not really unusual to see things mixed when it comes to something like scotch. We see a lot of people sneering at the idea that you would mix it, when in fact single malt whiskey can be used very nicely in cocktails. So that's the first one, and that's got quite a high corn content in there. So those other flavouring grains, the rye and the barley that might have been used in that, won't be quite so overpowering. So I think that's a brilliant Buffalo Trace. If you're first time whiskey drinker, that is a great introduction into this bit. Now, we're going to move in a slightly different direction with the flavours, but staying on board with something that's very good for an introduction. And we're doing Wild Turkey. And this is the Wild Turkey 81 proof, which is slightly lower in alcohol by volume than the Wild Turkey 101. Now, Wild Turkey is another great historic distillery in America. They did actually close in 1919. They reopened after Prohibition. And it was originally called the Rippey Distillery, but when they reopened, they renamed as Wild Turkey after a turkey shoot. And this has a turkey on the front, which is nice, a nice-looking turkey. It's not quite as impressive as a buffalo.
Is it a bird? Yes. Is it a plane?
No.
It's a bird, I just told you.
It's a bird and it's a turkey. In 2000, this is an interesting sideline story for Wild Turkey, they had a warehouse fire and thousands of litres of their maturing whiskey were spilled into the Kentucky River and thousands of fish died, which is very sad.
That's awful.
I bet it tasted nice.
Well, they probably did, but the scale of the disaster was massive.
Really?
Wild Turkey was not let off the hook. They had to pay the Kentucky Department of Fish $255,000.
God, that's a lot.
God, I mean, you're wrong place, wrong time. And an extra $1,000 just for the halibuts. Don't laugh at your own jokes, folks, but that is funny. We're drinking the 81 proof here, which is 40.5% ABV. Give this a taste, give it a smell, and you will notice that there's something a bit more spicy about this one, and that's because they've got more rye in there. So when we talk about how that grain affects the flavour, this one is slightly spicier. And yes, the wood, Sam, as you pointed out, does give it a bit of spice, but that rye is making this a little more prickly.
This, I tell you what, this tastes, if you're comparing the wood in both of them, this tastes like a sort of dusty school desk.
Yeah, okay. Sandalwood we talk about, don't we? That's very good, Ben.
Thank you. I didn't lick my desk very often at school. My nose was down close to it a lot. It would have smelt.
Yeah.
It smelt like this taste.
Yeah. Do you like it more or less than the other one?
I like it. Yes, I don't like it as much as the Buffalo Trace. I think it's quite like the sweetness of the bourbon. Mm. I quite like this feeling of you get that. It feels very fresh wood in the Buffalo Trace, whereas the Wild Turkey, probably actually a harder drink.
Mm, definitely.
And it's a bit more manly, isn't it?
I really like Buffalo Trace, although it's quite interesting because you get all this lovely vanilla, but you get more on the nose than you get on the palate.
Yeah.
So and it's almost a bit of a shock because actually you get that hit of alcohol and you get, and it's not, you know, you're almost expecting this kind of quite, you know, almost like a sweet vanilla-y drink, and then you forget that actually it's, you know.
So much of that spice and heat that you're talking about is coming from the grain, which is what is quite fascinating about bourbon as just a very small part of a wider whiskey industry, has so many variables at the very entry level to it. So it's quite a nice
way. Well, I think the Wild Turkey, I reckon, would make a nice sort of Manhattan or an old-fashioned. It's got some
bit more
of
bite to
it's got a bit more bite to it, whereas the Buffalo Trace, you can imagine sinking mint juleps at the Kentucky Derby.
Or over ice.
Yes.
At winter. By a roaring fire.
Yes.
Someone massaging your toes.
Wondering where it all went wrong.
Doing this podcast, Ben, talking about drinking piss. I think that was the start of it. So there we go. There are our bourbons. And as I say, we will work through other different whiskey types. But
you haven't actually answered Sam's...
What was Sam's question?
Question. Is bourbon a subcategory of American whiskey?
I said that at the beginning. I mean, listeners, hopefully you're having more joy listening.
I don't remember you saying that. Did I just drift off?
Yeah, you did, Ben. Thanks, mate.
Anyway, get a move on. We've got to go on to the next.
I've finished.
Yeah, you're
right.
Done.
All right,
thanks. You're the anchor.
How dare you? Right, Sam, tell us about a legend of liquor. Who are you talking about this week?
Okay, so this week I am talking about a gentleman I think you guys know, well, you don't know him well at all, but you, I think you've written about him before, and that is Nobel Prize winner Sir Winston Churchill.
Ah, yes.
We so well. Do feel free to pop in little snippets.
Well, we're here to learn from you, so you can tell us new stuff that we can use in our shows.
Okay, not carrying you.
I'll say my bits and you can just agree then.
Okay.
Yeah, go
okay,
on. Fine.
Sounds good.
So basically, Churchill had a legendary relationship with alcohol. He drank a lot of booze. Was he an alcoholic? Wasn't he an alcoholic? Not really sure. He did admit that he did depend on alcohol to a degree, but he basically was a absolutely massive boozer. And Eleanor Roosevelt, when hosting him during World War II, apparently was amazed, quote-unquote, that anyone could smoke so much and drink so much and keep perfectly well. And apparently her husband, the president, had to sleep for 10 hours a night for 3 nights after a visit to recover from the copious amount of drinking that they would do.
Crikey.
Yes. Not only did he drink quite large quantities, but he was a kind of alcohol loving omnivore. He drank like
steadily and consistently.
He was not monogamous in his drinking. He drank lots of different things. Yeah. He had a thirst for
everything.
For everything.
So I think he started with the whiskey.
It was called the Papa cocktail, wasn't it?
But he topped out with water. Didn't
but then he topped out with water throughout the day. And apparently, according to his private secretary, Jock Colville, it was actually more like a mouthwash. Like it was really weak. It's almost just like he needed it as a crutch to go through the day. And his reputation as a heavy drinker started in 1899 when he used to be a sort of journalist correspondent, and he went off to the Boer War, and for the 3 week journey over, do you know how much booze he took with him?
Go on.
Okay, so I didn't think it was that unreasonable. He took 36 bottles of wine, 18 bottles of scotch, and also some brandy for a 3 week trip. That's quite
that's quite a lot. That's excessive.
But that could have been some, he could have been doing some gifting.
He could have been doing some gifting.
He wasn't doing gifting.
I don't think he was.
I mean, there's been a bit of revisionist history on Churchill, but he definitely wasn't gifting out there.
But despite he basically got this reputation as being quite a heavy drinker. Although, as he very famously asserted, I've taken more out of alcohol than alcohol has taken out of me. So he always maintained the fact that he was totally in control. Basically, whiskey was at the beginning of the day. He'd often then, certainly when he retired, have champagne at lunch, and then maybe he'd have another bottle for dinner, and apparently liked to drink Claritin soda in between.
Claritin soda? Yeah. Now, well, let's go back to Sauvignon Blanc spritzers here.
Yeah.
Claritin soda? Soda's got no business being in claret, has it? Wine expert,
no.
Sam?
No. Okay. But what's quite interesting is, like, and champagne's quite low alcohol, so it's almost like he had this steady drip feed of booze throughout the day. But actually, nothing really, like, massively pokey. And you know, he does have this kind of watered-down whiskey, and then he'd have champagne, which is about 12.5%, and then he'd have claret and soda. But his big, big, big passion was champagne.
Right.
And he met Odette Paul Roget in Paris at the British Embassy when it was liberated in November 1944, and they became firm friends, and she sent him a case of champagne every year to his Chartwell residence in Kent, which is delightful if you want
I've not been around it.
Oh, it's lovely. It's a National Trust property. And she'd send a case of champagne every year. And then when he died, they put little black bands around the label for the wines being exported over to Britain. And then actually in the 1980s, 1984, I think, they named their prestige cuvee Sir Winston Churchill.
Lovely.
After Winston Churchill. But interestingly, because he was, had quite a smart background and brought up quite in an aristocratic fashion, where being drunk was really uncool. So apparently, despite the fact he drank all this booze, well, he never really showed it. However, the only thing I think that seems to contradict that is the famous quote that is unclear who he made it to. I think he was in the House of Commons at the time, and it was either to Lady Astor or Bessie Braddock. You know, whatever it was, something along the lines of, Mr. Churchill, you are drunk. And he said, Madam, I may be drunk, but you are ugly, and tomorrow I will be sober.
Yeah.
Which is one of the coolest quotes.
I'm not sure. There seems to be a lot of suggestion that that wasn't him, and that is just a very cool quip. I think he gets attributed with quotes that he may not have said.
That she made.
And the other thing that makes people think he was an alcoholic or had a drink problem, he had a speech impediment.
Well, I read that.
Which made him sound like he was slurring his words.
Yeah. And, so is that true? He had a speech impediment?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, because if you're drinking those, you can totally see why people might think that's you slurring. Rather, and also, he's the kind of person who probably wouldn't admit to having a speech impediment.
Yes.
Mm. I don't know.
I mean, he's a great drinker, but what did he actually do? Yeah. I mean, come on. Yeah. What did he achieve, really? Who is he?
Who is he, really?
Well, if you think about it, it was him and Stalin and Mussolini. No, not Mussolini.
Mussolini.
He was on the other side.
No.
So it's him, Stalin, and Roosevelt.
Yeah.
All massive drink. I mean, Stalin. Mm.
Stalin did it, he was a problem child. But he did. Yeah. I mean, they all like to drink.
And whereas I think
they
very
frequently
side,
drunk together, didn't they?
You had Hitler.
Yeah.
Teetotal. Yeah, Mussolini barely drank.
He didn't drink after an age. He only drank milk, I think.
Yes, and he would only drink Italian wine at functions, but only to sort of boost the sort of image of Italian wine. And he had
Japanese guy, whose name forget. Yeah. He didn't drink either, did he?
No. So you had three boozers versus three abstainers.
And three boozers were on the right side.
Who won?
But however, just to finish off my little
Churchillian
story, Legends of Liquor, there is a bit of question mark over whether his heavy drinking sort of led to his political decline or not. Oh. And because Lord Moran once said something along the lines of that his boozing makes his speech more difficult to understand and fuddles what is left of his wits, and yet he does not attempt to control his thirst.
But if it's towards the end of his career, he's just won a Second World War, you would be like, do you know what?
I'll have a drink.
And actually, and then after he retired, apparently he upped to boozing even more. And he literally would have the whiskey, bottle of champagne every lunch, maybe a bottle of champagne every dinner. But then on doctor's orders, he swapped his whiskey for Cointreau.
Oh, that's yes, marginal. Mm.
What a marvel.
It must have made a huge difference.
Wowzers. Yeah. It's not water, is it? But champagne, was he a bit of an expert on it, or was he just someone who liked it?
Yeah, I don't think he's a recognised expert. I think he absolutely loves champagne, and I think he had this known love, particularly of Paul Roger. And I shall finish off with a few champagne quotes from Sir Winston Churchill. One, in success you deserve it, and in defeat you need it. Two, champagne is the wine of civilization and the oil of government. And last but not least, during the World War II, remember, gentlemen, it's not just France we're fighting for, it's champagne.
Oh,
yes.
Ledge.
And I shall finish on that note. So, yeah, Sir Winston Churchill, massively heavy drinker, yes, alcoholic.
I'd say a functional.
Total legend.
Probably a functional. High functioning.
Either way, listeners, it was a different time. It was a time of war. And today we say drink less, drink better.
Did you know, before we finish, the Danes brewed a beer in his honour, and it was Carlsberg Special Brew.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So that was first brewed for Winston Churchill.
Oh, and also just one a last little thing, which is quite interesting, I think is mildly reflective on his alcohol's a crutch, is that the king gave up booze to kind of support the chaps during the war, and basically Winston said,
no way.
he couldn't even do it for the king.
Good man.
But we must mention,
but not a good man in some respects.
In the name
just
of balance,
yeah,
that he was a warmongering wanker as well.
Daft racist, and so on.
That's a very, very strange view on genetics.
It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because when you're talking about legends, we talked about Peter the Great the other day, who slay a number of his subjects and was quite, on one hand, quite unpleasant, on the other hand,
everyone's
a drinker.
We've all
got those closets, people. Never forget it. The thing to do is to get in the closet and drink.
Yes.
Alone. There we go. Good
so,
one.
Yes, it was the drinks really cabinet that won war and not the war cabinet. Mm. Ah, see what I've done there. So, that brings us neatly, shambolically, towards the end of our podcast. Thank you once again to both of you. You've been amazing.
Thanks, Ben. So have you.
Thank you.
If you've enjoyed this podcast and like to learn more about drink, then you can see Ben and Tom, the Thinking Drinkers, in our live show where we'll be tasting alcohol, making you laugh. We're on tour. We're at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival throughout August and then around the UK and in London. All dates and ticket prices can be found on our website, www.thinkingdrinkers.com. Please buy a ticket, please.
And if you want any more wine information, then go to my site, www.themistressofwine.com. Thanks.
Join us next week when Tom will be doing his spit or swallow. Sam will be conducting a tasting of wine of some description. And I will be introducing to a wonderful legend of liquor. I'm very excited about it.
Stay tuned.
Cheers.
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 This was a Grand Cru podcast from 7 Digital. Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.